Hey guys, welcome to Sales and Stances. Today I'm going to be sitting down with Mark O'Brien. He is a writer, he is a storyteller, he's also the founder of the O'Brien Communications Group and author of numerous books, especially even a series of books for children, which is very enlightening. Thank you very much for listening and enjoy. Welcome to the show. We are here today with Mark O'Brien, writer, businessman, medium curator, and founder and principal of the O'Brien Communications Group. Mark, how are you doing today?
I am just fine, Anthony, and I am grateful for the invitation to be on your podcast. It's a pleasure to be here.
Perfect. One thing that drew me to you not only was your writing, but also you're from the greater Hartford area of Connecticut. I lived a number of years just outside of New Haven in Hampton, Connecticut. So
I have family there.
Awesome. Great to hear that. I have really fond memories of Sleeping Giant Mountain and just life in New England, which is really cool to return to. Tell us a little bit about how you got, about your background and how you got started in writing.
Oh boy. I think what I would share with you, about my background is that, I had to reconcile myself, at a very early age, in fact, high school or earlier, to the point that I was and was going to continue to be, a late bloomer. And when I was younger, I typically considered myself to be somewhere around 10 years behind the curve. You know, I think as I've gotten older, that distance may have gotten a little longer, but that is not to be taken in any way as a complaint, because as someone who didn't know me very well once pointed out to me, and at the time he did, I didn't think he had any idea in the world what he was talking about, but he said to me, "O'Brien, you live a charmed life." And he turned out to be exactly right. So, you know, I kind of came to the things that I have been fortunate enough to achieve by sort of the scenic route. I have definitely taken the long way around on a lot of things. But oddly enough, I would tell you, a writer is the only thing that I've ever been absolutely positive I am. And, you know, there are points in my life at which that caused me some, I'll just call it difficulty. It caused my Marine Corps father some consternation because, you know, a Marine Corps guy who went on to an Ivy League school and was, you know, all about pragmatism and just tell me what the rules are and like that. He just wasn't at all certain what anybody who fancied himself to be a writer would do or amount to. But fortunately, both of us survived my youth and managed to get through my adolescence, and you know, my father was around and a very significant part of my life until he was 85, and I'm forever grateful for that.
That's so true, and honestly, it hits home for me because I'm not an accomplished writer in any sense of the word, but I do enjoy it, and it's really cathartic to write. But in my youth, as with many writers, you kind of have that nagging voice of the judgment of other people. What do others think? As a young man, the kind of stereotypes that come with being creative and writing. And returning to that passion, recently, one of my previous guests, Maria Rosa, a poet from Venezuela, kind of opened my eyes to writing that way. And I love your pieces, especially A Gift in Black and White, where you draw from a more personal experience, even though you do have a very strong background in professional writing. Do you find your personal experiences more inspirational, or do you find more inspiration in the stories of others?
Wow, that is a terrific question. I think I have to say both. And I have to say that for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think telling stories at all, but particularly about myself, I think could fairly be construed as coming with the territory of being an Irishman. I think that statement might have made a lot more sense to you if you had had the opportunity to know my grandfather, O'Brien. Grandpa was just an amazing storyteller. And, I definitely think that by luck of the draw, I followed in his footsteps. And I think telling the stories of others is a source of joy and fulfillment for me, because they help me discover our commonalities. And I think some people, and I would raise my hand as first among them, when we experience whatever you want to call it, troubles, challenges, difficulties, diseases, particular states of mind, et cetera, so many people, and again, including me, fall into the trap of thinking that we're the only ones who experience that. We're the only ones who suffer from that. And nothing could be farther from the truth. And I at least take, in addition to the joy of that discovery, I take comfort in knowing that whether we choose to recognize it or not, we're all in this thing together, and we share so many more things and aspects of life than we don't share. I find reward in both of those things, telling stories from my own experience and telling the stories of the experiences of others. Until you ask that question, which is, again, a great one, I don't know that I ever would have thought to make a distinction between those two things, because they feel so very much the same to me.
I've found myself a lot of times writing my observations, not necessarily my experience, but my observations of certain things. And the way that you do it, a lot of times, even though it's not so poetic in the way that you write, it reminds me a lot of another Irishman who I hold dear in my heart as an influence, Seamus Heaney, with his poem Digging. To kind of draw on that, do you see your writing is kind of a continuation of that digging, kind of the agricultural roots of providing not only this kind of sustenance, but this kind of just, I don't even really know how to say it, but even just the tradition of where what comes from that wonderful island.
So before I even try to respond to that, Anthony, I just want to tell you that on my end, anyway, the audio is periodically breaking up. So there are times when whatever you're saying just completely drops. So I did not hear the name of the Seamus Heaney poem that you mentioned. And so I don't really have a reference point for your question.
Sorry, that was Digging.
Okay, I don't know that poem, but as soon as you said his name, the first thing I thought of was another one of his poems called The Skunk.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah.
Oh my God, that is just beautiful. So if the question was, you know, do I find, I hesitate to call it inspiration, but I guess I will, or at least motivation in that kind of digging. I don't think so. I have to admit that I don't know the poem. But oddly enough, I think I find that motivation again in the connections that I referred to earlier. I once read an interview with Billy Joel in which he said that he loved having written, but he hated writing. And I realized when I read that is not true of me at all. I love everything about writing, and I love the idea of trying to find the words that convey the sentiments that I'm prompted to feel by particular circumstances, experiences, whether they're my own or those of others. And I don't know if you've read my having written this anywhere, but I also think of writing as very much musical. And I think I probably mean that particularly in terms of the evocative nature of it and the rhythms of it. And whenever I write anything, I always read it aloud and walk around when I do that if I can, because I want to see if I can hear and feel the music in it. And if I can't, I revise it. I would also want to share a couple of other things with you, particularly as it pertains to your writing. If you want to write, I absolutely encourage you to do that. And I firmly believe you can. And so here are two things that I've learned, arguably both by virtue of being a late bloomer. Because I was 28 before I even got to college, I was about 30 when I was invited to be a teaching assistant for a freshman composition class. And I take this to be a little bit humorous in that, the freshman composition class is usually assigned to the low person on the totem pole in the English department. And the year that I was invited, the low man was a gentleman named David Langston, who had a PhD, if you can imagine any such thing, a PhD in intellectual history.
Wow.
And for a while, I was even afraid to open my mouth around that dude, because I was absolutely certain, you know, I was going to reveal myself to be a moron with everything I said. But we actually got to be pretty good friends, and he said something to that class once that it took me a long time to figure out, but he was right. And he said, "You can't learn to write. You can only learn to rewrite." And the notion is that until you get it out, whether it's on a piece of paper or on a computer screen or something, it's fair to imagine that you don't even really know what you're thinking about. But once you get it out there, you can see it, you can crystallize it, you can start to shape it, you can give it your own voice, you can give it tone and style and rhythm, and you can work on it until it's what you want it to be. And the other thing that I will share with you is that, and again, under the heading of late bloomer, I was in my late 50s before I wrote and published my first book for children. And being able to share that book with young students at their schools changed so much. And, you know, I learned, and I should have known this from my own children. I have two sons, but children are fearless. And they will ask you questions that adults wouldn't dare ask you. And they will reveal things about themselves that adults would never dare reveal, with you as a possible exception, particularly if they have a fear of writing. And listening to them explain to me and express their fear of writing kind of gave me this inspiration. And I said to them, listen, one of the most powerful words I know has only three letters in it. And that word is yet. So think about this. If you started to write something and you don't know how you're going to finish it, and somebody says to you, well, what are you going to do with that story? You could either say, oh, I don't know. Or you could say, I don't know yet. And if you say yet, you are implying the fact that that thing, that story, is yours to create and finish. There's nobody else who can tell you that it's right or wrong. There's nobody else that can create however that thing unfolds. That's yours. And if you stay with it and keep working on it until it pleases you, then you've done what you're supposed to do. And then they'll say to me, well, how do I know anybody else is going to like it? And the answer to that is simple. You don't. But if you're compelled to create it, all you can do is create it. And if you've created it, you might as well put it out there and see what happens. And part of what I think is, I cannot be the only person in the world who thinks the way I think or thinks the things I think. So if I create something and put it out there, that something is going to find other like thinkers. And all I can say is, in my case, and maybe it's just more evidence of my charmed life, that's turned out to be true.
I listening to that, I just heard the kind of the famous interview with Eunice Wyman, aka Nina Simone. An interviewer asked her to define freedom, and she playfully bantered back, you define freedom. I don't know. But then she got serious and said, freedom is to have no fear. And if you can have no fear, kind of in the way I see my niece, actually, she has both ADHD and mild autism. She has this kind of innocent courage and creative side that a lot of adults I see suppress because of that fear. And I see it as more of a benefit and an attribute that one should hold on to. Obviously, you have to be serious at some point. You have to go to your work at some point. You have to maintain obligations, of course. But to restrain your artistic spirit is something that I think we're more trained to do than we are to learning how to be creative. I think anybody can be. You just are. But it's learning to let go and learning to open up and learning to take chances. I have a very famous post-it on my monitor at my work as I write content for sales emails for my team. And it says, all first drafts suck. And it just makes me realize so much that, like you said, you have to put it out before you can revise, and you have to take that first chisel away at the sculpture before you can really polish and hone.
And for whatever this is worth, I've actually used the analogy of sculpture before. You know, the idea of starting with an entire language and then chip out the stuff that doesn't look like what you want it to look like. And I would also say to you that I didn't count the number of words that that professor said to the freshman composition class, but you just completely crystallized it in four words. All first drafts suck. Amen. And I also want to respond to what you said about what Nina Simone said. and maybe this is just me, I actually don't think it's possible to live without fear. I think it's possible to live with fear. And I will tell you two things from my own experience. I started O'Brien Communications Group after I had worked for an advertising agency. And I just decided while I was there that I needed to create O'Brien Communications Group. It doesn't even really matter, I think, what my needs were, but I needed to do that. And I gave my notice on my 50th birthday, and I endured a 2.5-hour lecture from the guy that I worked for. The entirety of the lecture was intended to convince me that I was going to fail. And, I would be some really extraordinary kind of bullshit artist if I told anybody that I wasn't terrified. And I do mean terrified. I don't mean nervous. I mean, I was scared to death of this thing. And two things occurred to me. Well, actually, three. One, the only thing scarier to me was waking up 10 years later at 60 and having to wonder, man, what would have happened if you had tried that? The idea of having to ask myself that question countered my fear. The second thing that happened to me was my sister, my older sister, happened to call me that day to wish me a happy birthday. And she told me that her husband had just been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And I knew exactly what this guy was going to do. He was a career naval officer. He was completely squared away. I knew he was going to jump in, evaluate a bunch of treatment options, pick one, get the treatment, and beat it. And that's exactly what he did. So I'm thinking, come on, dude, are you kidding? You quit a job and you're terrified. And your brother-in-law is looking down the barrel of prostate cancer, and all he's doing is getting on with it. Get a grip. And then, believe it or not, one of my favorite philosophers is Mike Tyson. And I read an interview with him once. And the guy said to him, you know, one of the things that really amazes me about you is that you're not afraid. And Mike Tyson said, are you out of your mind? Or do you think I am? Do you know what I do for a living? And the guy said, well, yeah. And he said, I strip myself to the waist and get in a ring with a guy whose job is to hurt me. If I weren't afraid, I would be insane. He said, what you have to do is channel that fear and think of it as another kind of energy and channel it. So God bless Nina Simone if she figured out a way to live a life without fear. I've never figured that one out, but I have learned to some extent what to do with it and how to be constructive with it.
That's perfect way to put it, and I love that quote. Mike's been doing a lot of good stuff, and so have you. What is next for Mark O'Brien?
Wow. You know what? I don't know. I joke all the time, and it's only a half a joke, I think. I have no idea what I want to be when I grow up. But one of the things I say all the time, particularly to my wife, and one of the 3 million reasons I love her, is that she understands me when I say it. I can't not write. So no matter what else is in store for me, I know I'm going to be writing.
That's great stuff. Thank you so much, Mark. Mark, how can people follow you in your writing?
They can follow me on Medium, and on Medium I'm just Mark O'Brien, and I'm not the only Mark O'Brien out there. So, you know, they can look for things like pieces like It's About Time, Everybody's Got a Story, A Gift in Black and White. I can't even remember the other things that I've published so far. You know, they can find me on LinkedIn by Mark O'Brien as well. And if they do that, they'll find the blog posts that I put there. They can find the same posts on my website, which is O'BrienCG, for Communications Group, O'BrienCG.com. And if they want to look for me on Amazon, they're also going to have to put in, when they search, they're going to have to put in my middle name, which is Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N. So if you go on Amazon and search Mark Nelson O'Brien, you'll find all kinds of stuff out there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Mark, for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. And please, everybody, give Mark a little applause on Medium. He writes some amazing stuff. Thank you again, Mark.
And I thank you, Anthony, for your time and for this invitation. I'm so happy to know you, and I'm so happy that we'll remain connected. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
After our conversation, Mark and I, we had some time to talk and discuss a few things. And traditionally, when a guest is on the podcast, they also have their artistic side revealed through a performance. It's not mandatory. I can always find another poem or artist to fill in if a guest objects. That's no problem. But Mark confessed something to me, which really hit home, being that I have recently overcome my own stage fright and revealing my artistic side. But Mark was telling me that he had never really performed or read aloud his poetry for a public audience. So with my approval, he asked if he could share for the first time through this medium, and I was absolutely ecstatic. That it was such an honor to have such on the show. So this is Mark O'Brien performing his poem, Age of Aquarius.
The Age of Aquarius. There's a neighborhood I lived in for the best part of my youth. Friends and neighbors came and went and left their souls. Over all the years I lived there, I was sending down my roots, one for each year lost to counting goals. And those roots were buried mountains, deep and steadfast under me, a base on which to build my life's success. If whatever I was building ever faltered in the least, the foundation underneath would bear the stress. But those goals were finest powder, scattered freely in the wind. In a gust of thought, they're gone and soon forgot. Impassioned, whispered promises from ladies of the night. For a while, they seem real, and then they're not. So I move without direction, ever dreaming, ever free, from the bondage of commitment to a cause. And I wonder if this freedom isn't bondage in itself, if a dreamer isn't one of nature's flaws.
Thank you, Mark O'Brien, for being our guest. Thank you to our listeners for just giving your time to hear Mark's story and his performance. Just a few words of thanks to our sponsors, Wax Up Candles by Catalina Perez, handcrafted candles made in Bogota, Colombia. Wax Up Candles can be found on Instagram at Wax Up. And also a special thanks to our friends over at Paradox and Poetry, based out of Bogota, Colombia, an artistic collective for performance, storytelling, spoken word poetry, events, both private and public, Paradox and Poetry.